What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, FightfulSelect.com. This is the Backstage Report podcast. I know a lot of you are new to this show, so this is about 20-25 minutes of exclusive news that came from Fightful, or maybe you haven't even heard yet. Contract updates, stats, injury updates, all that good stuff. And obviously, there's some pretty substantial things that we are to talk about on this edition. Fightful broke the news on Saturday of a COVID-19 positive test within WWE. About a half an hour later, they confirmed that news. And because all that news is out there, you all have all read the news, I'm going to walk you all through the process of learning that, reaching out, and finally getting that news confirmed. There was a lot of back and forth, well, a little bit more forth than back between myself and WWE, but I first heard a murmur of this positive test. I believe it was last Monday. It was the Monday, it would have been the day after WrestleMania wrapped. But it didn't have any credence to it. I didn't have anything solid. I just heard that there was a positive test within WWE. On Wednesday morning or afternoon, I believe it was, I outright got information from a person within the industry. This person has tested positive for COVID-19. And that I needed to look into it. I immediately reached out to WWE with this information after getting it confirmed with a couple of wrestlers, and they asked if I was going to write a report on it. And my response to that was, not with the information that I presently have, because unless that person confirms to me or publicly, or WWE confirms to me or publicly, that there was a positive test or that this specific person tested positive, I felt like that would have been too reckless. In a situation like this, you always have to question whether or not the people that give you news have an axe to grind. And at this point, if they're looking for personal gain, if they're looking to not be able to show up Friday, Monday, Wednesday to tapings, whatever it may be, there's a lot of things you got to weigh in that aspect. So I thought in a situation as serious as this, I would reach out to the person in question, and WWE. And after that, I didn't get a reply to WWE when I said no. I felt like this would be reckless to run this right now, as is, without my eyes on any official documentation or anything like that. Over Thursday and Friday, I reached out to probably, gosh, 24 WWE wrestlers and had multiple people within the industry also reach out to me, and they, unprompted, provided the name and this information in which I had heard previously. And I was told Friday, yeah, there was this memo that came out last weekend has a lot of information in it, and I asked if I could get eyes on that memo, because if I could get eyes on that memo and could get it confirmed that it was legit, then I could run it as WWE informs their talent via memo that there was a positive COVID-19 test, and I wouldn't have to run it as positive COVID-19 test, yada yada, WWE confirms. So I did not hear back from WWE Thursday or Friday when I followed up for comment, and understandably so. They probably don't want that type of information out there if they can help it. And any wrestler that I spoke to, I made it very clear, hey, I'm not going to run this person's name. I think that's a major invasion of privacy. However, I do think that the news of a positive COVID-19 test should be out there. And during this period, there were staff who did not know about this. There were staff who were there working on the shows, or that would be working on the shows, that had no idea that there was a positive COVID-19 test within the company. There were actually a couple of wrestlers that didn't know as well, because there's an internal WWE app that they use, and they get updates, they get messages, and so on and so forth. And some of them just don't check it, quite frankly. There are some people that are kind of off the grid in that regard, and they don't bother checking that, or they check it for other information, but not necessarily that. So there were some that really didn't know what was going on in that regard. So to start from the beginning, memo goes out the weekend of April 5th, informing talent specifically across all brands, NXT, Raw, SmackDown, that there was a positive COVID-19 test. It named the person. It said that that person gave WWE their blessing to reveal the information of how they believe they got it, the testing process, anything else, as well as the name of the person. The following day, we're given a tip that there's a positive COVID-19 test. Wednesday, Fightful's informed of the name, the situation, and everything surrounding it. We reach out to WWE over the next 3 days. No dice. We reach out to several wrestlers, dozens of wrestlers, over the next 3 days. Got a lot of supplemental information about that. Friday night is when Vince McMahon's decree of going live first got sent to us. Somebody was like, kayfabe this brother, yada yada, which means don't publish this, but Vince McMahon decided today that they're going live for everything because they were going to mass tape. And there were actually people that were brought to SmackDown that weren't even used because the original plan was to tape, and instead, they're going live all the time. Wrestlers, by and large, are not happy about this. They were just, quite frankly, some of them were livid. I had some of them that called me during the show, during SmackDown, and were not screaming at me, just screaming in general, like, don't they know what the hell this is? Don't they know that this is putting families and friends in danger? But the information that I was provided Friday night before Ryan Satin published the report was that Vince McMahon said that Fox and USA pay for live content and they'll get live content. I wasn't told anything in regards to the report of, well, they have to have this number of live shows, this number of tape shows, anything like that. I had been told earlier in the week that people in WWE were provided a piece of paper from WWE Legal that deemed them essential media. Now, I don't know if they went out to try to clear this with the state, with the county, with anything like that. I don't know. I don't know what measures they took in that regard, but it was more for in case authorities had questioned them about why they're there. So all that unfolds Friday. Keep in mind, Vince McMahon was aware of the positive COVID-19 test at this point. He was very aware of it. The rest of the world wasn't, but Vince McMahon was, and most of these wrestlers were. And some of these wrestlers were contacting me outright on Friday, not knowing that I knew about the positive COVID-19 test. They were just sounding off about the fact that they had to go live again, but trying to keep the COVID-19 test thing close to their vest. Others didn't care. They knew I knew, and they kind of factored that into them sounding off. So Saturday, I get eyes on the memo because I had told multiple people if I can get a copy of the memo, that's when I can run a story. That's when I have something solid enough to where I feel comfortable doing this. So I drafted the article and left a space for WWE to comment and provide any additional information. I ran this by Jimmy Van and my staff, and had been running this by Jimmy Van and my staff all throughout the week. And Saturday afternoon, I asked WWE about the memo and provided them with the memo that I had been provided. And I was asked, well, when do you plan on running this? That wasn't really a response that gave me any information. So I said, imminently. They didn't reply, and I ran the story. About a half an hour later is when they provided a statement that went into Ryan Satin's story, and then I'd say a few minutes after that, they gave me the statement as well. And they had supplied some information in there that I wasn't going to make public about that person's role in the company as an on-camera talent. That's just not something that I was going to provide because I thought that was... To me, it didn't matter if they were staff, wrestler, on-camera talent. They were at the tapings, and that was all that really needed to be said. And the suspicion is that they contracted COVID-19 after they left the tapings. So I don't think that they were going to have this news out there and supply a statement or any information to anybody else unless the memo had been provided, because without that, I don't think this information is out there, at least in a manner in which it got confirmed. Because when I asked earlier in the week, I was just asked another question. Are you running this? When I asked about the memo even, I was asked, when are you running this? Because at that point, they knew that I was going to publish a story about this. Because without that memo, I think it would have been irresponsible to the person in question, whether or not they were named or whether or not they were named. WWE is a company, people that are suffering from this illness, my media outlet, my staff, and myself to run that. Because it was just conjecture. Again, you have to always wonder, do these wrestlers have an axe to grind or what's being said amongst them? But at the time when I got eyes on the memo, I was like, okay, I can take this to WWE, and this is something I can ask for a statement on. If they give it to me, great. If they don't, then you know what? I've got enough to run this anyway, independent of that. And again, that's why my headline says, WWE talent received memo about positive COVID-19 case instead of COVID-19 case in WWE, because my story was about the memo, and that was the way of effectively confirming that talent had been told that. That's when WWE then provided the supplemental information to other media outlets and the statement. So they're still going live. They also told ESPN that they still wanted to go live after this. That is dumb. It's a bad idea. I'll try to keep my opinions out of that as much as I can, but that's dumb. It is not good. It is not safe. They should not be doing that. To follow up, the person in question was said to have been recovering well. A person on our staff actually was in contact with the person, not even realizing the positive test, and had no idea. So, I mean, they're healing up very well, it would seem. The memo itself was addressed from Triple H, Paul Levesque, and the roster reaction was mixed, some of them saying that it didn't even need looked into. Others were upset about WWE resuming their filming schedule. And then late last week, the rumors had just spread widely among mainly former employees of WWE, like longtime ones even. Like ones that had been there 10, 15 years were reaching out and saying, hey, is this true? Did you hear about this? So it had made its way around. I know that there were actually a couple people in AEW that had asked me about it too, and not really something I felt comfortable getting out there, but that was the WWE COVID-19 situation, and it was a messy one. It was a messy one. We have some WrestleMania notes. I heard that John Cena was very receptive to ideas in the Firefly Funhouse and went as far as to help set the stage for the match in media interviews leading to it, because he liked the approach that they were going. At least according to those that I spoke to, he said that he liked the approach that they were going. This was also filmed in the Stanford area, either at or near the warehouse. That's why they had access to so many sets like Nitro and the Fist and all that good stuff. And we did not hear any concerns raised backstage about eliminating certain parts of the Randy Orton Edge Last Man Standing match for concerns of comparisons to the Chris Benoit tragedy. As I'm sure many of you know, Chris Benoit hung himself with weight equipment, and there was a very similar looking situation there. And I was told that, hey, a lot less people see this before it even goes out than usual. So maybe that's why the concerns weren't raised. And it was very tight-lipped anyway. So there wasn't a lot of room to really put that out there. We also followed up on the Rhea Ripley situation. It was originally reported by PW Insider she was back in Australia after visa issues. But sources in WWE said that not only was she there, I mean, she confirmed that she was there at home in Florida, but she was originally planned for a match at the NXT tapings with Chelsea Green, but we do not know how that shifted with the move to live. So she's around. She is around. Ring of Honor had a talent meeting. I don't know when this talent meeting happened, obviously before all this, but it was when they had some downtime, and PJ Black told me that they had this meeting, and Sinclair and ROH flew in talent to contribute ideas and help out with the direction of the company. And he said there was about a list of 140 things that were brought up, and Black claims that they implemented probably 100 of those. And that the meeting and the implementation gave him a lot of hope about the ideas that he has and the things that he's pitched. And he said that a lot of them happened immediately. And the meeting wasn't mandatory, but it was indicated that a lot of the roster ended up going and showing up, which made him happy and kind of reinforced the positive feelings that he had about signing with that company. Now, there's more on this because he had turned down a deal with NXT as well. But he had mentioned there were plans to have a special merchandise stand for the past versus present shows that reflected the past days of wrestling. I was really excited for that show. It was a real good-looking show. Real good-looking show. We've got that PJ Black interview dropping this week. You all need to watch that. He reveals like a lot of really great stuff. He told me that he had lost his passion for wrestling for a few years, but gained it back with Lucha Underground and ROH, and isn't sure what happened with Global Force Wrestling, but said that he would want the world to see some of that content that was filmed there because there's a lot of good content out there. He said that during his WWE days, Vince McMahon liked his Darewolf name and character, but Triple H didn't. However, WWE trademarked it, and when they abandoned it, Black picked it up and now has ownership of it. That same thing happened with Gangrel in the past. There was a lot of trademark issues between White Wolf, WWE, and the man himself. But PJ Black got the trademark for Darewolf. I talked to him about his 450 on Vince McMahon, which he says might have been the only time he got the wind knocked out of him while he did the move because Vince was so jacked. Vince, however, did not care and was happy with how everything turned out. And when PJ Black went back at stage and said, sorry about that, Vince was like, about what? Which is a total Vince story. He said that he would often pitch ideas, he being Black, but says they would always end up getting shot down and is interested in possibly moving into a creative role at some point, but has a new character that he's working on that will be really cool. Talked to me at length about Ring of Honor and the current wrestling landscape, the creative freedom he gets, and him getting to pick his own flights on his new Ring of Honor contract, which he's re-signed for multiple years. He indicated there's an option year attached to that as well. There were some talks about bringing him into AEW with Angelico and Jack Evans, but noted that there was someone within AEW that didn't like him, and that it was the only person that he doesn't get along with in wrestling, and doesn't think he will ever, ever end up working there. He's also in the middle of a lawsuit with Tidal, who produced a ring that he and RVD were wrestling in South Africa that broke through. Now, let me tell you, this is like a boxing ring that they were in, and it's very hard to break a boxing ring, and they went right through it. The promoter was freaking out, and Tidal told them that they got the pro wrestling ring dimensions from Wikipedia. I have a really fun interview with Gregory Iron going up this week. I think it's up Tuesday. He is just such a great talent, and I interviewed him in Cleveland ahead of when I got my hair cut, and it's finally releasing. I finally get to put some of these out. He's also blocked by Hulk Hogan, like me, so it's good to know we're in good company. He was motivated to start his Iron On podcast by Stone Cold Steve Austin, who had him on his show and asked him to hang around and do a second show. And Gregory Iron was like, what am I going to say? No, Stone Cold Steve Austin, I will not hang around and talk about wrestling some more with you. He spoke about the mindset that goes into his shows, saying that he prefers to do them in person, that he draws a lot out of his hosting ability from his desire to be a wrestling commentator when he was younger. We also spent a lot of time talking about being a heel. Now, this is a unique situation and a unique conversation that exists almost only to him. Gregory Iron has cerebral palsy, and I didn't want to make the conversation about cerebral palsy, but it did present a good talking point of how do you get over as a heel when everybody knows you have cerebral palsy? They're going to be pulling for you anyway. And he says that he likes that challenge. He would remember being bullied as a child and channeled those feelings and flipped them around on the crowd to garner heat and use their existing insecurities that they would have when they bullied him to hammer it home and be a heel. He discussed the balance between being a heel with being an inspiring person because of what he has experienced throughout his life, and noted that often social media following that he has understands that he can play both sides of the coin, but he likes to leave people feeling conflicted on whether or not they should boo him. And he said that he kind of prefers when somebody knows what the deal is and they respect his work, they prefer that they go along with whether they should boo or cheer him according to how the story is supposed to play out, instead of being like, yeah, I like this guy, when he's supposed to be playing a heel. We asked him the very important question of if he could wrestle any president, who would it be? And he said Abe Lincoln. And we're probably definitely doing an article on that. He said that sometimes MJF crosses the line with his promos, and that somebody that he talks to about that and will even say, hey, maybe you should scale it back a little bit. That interview is fantastic. Gregory Iron is fantastic. We talked about like the 96 Royal Rumble even. Great conversation. A reminder that the Fightful Wrestling Weekly does go up early for Tier 2 subscribers Monday morning. Usually like a little bit after midnight is when I do it. Sometimes the following morning. And then it goes up for free for Fightful, Fightful.com on Wednesdays. So a big thank you to everybody who is a Tier 2 subscriber as well. Injury updates. Nia Jax returned after missing a full year of action. Good to see her back. The fact that she was able to get back technically in under a year from double ACL surgery is very impressive. And she claims that she was cleared months ago. So, hey, that's awesome. Dana Brooke also returned after being quarantined, as did The Miz. Also, The Big Show appeared after not appearing on WWE programming since mid-January, so he was back in action during WrestleMania weekend or WrestleMania week, whatever it was, whenever it was that they filmed everything. Nick Jackson returned to action for AEW, kind of. I don't think these matches actually count, but BTE, being the Elite, is effectively running their own promotion right now that consists of Nick Jackson, Matt Jackson, Peter Avalon, Brandon Cutler, Scorpio Sky, Frankie Kazarian, Christopher Daniels, and a couple of jobbers. So they're doing some stuff to keep themselves in action there. Other than that, no more updates. But I do have one coming this week. Just got to get a confirmation on it. Contract updates. The Revival have been released from their deals. Scott Dawson's deal was set to be up this month anyway. Or at least that's what had been reported. I'm told there might be a little more that meets the eye there. And Dash was going to be up in June. But an arrangement was provided in which the Revival were released now. I mean, there was no reason to hold on to them at this point. No reason to hold on to them at this point. Because they probably wouldn't have worked for WWE anymore during that time. We're probably not going to see live events for quite a while. So there's no reason to hang on to them. Anna Jay has signed with AEW, or joined AEW, I should say. I don't know that she signed. As we mentioned, Kylie Rae did sign with Impact Wrestling. That is a hell of a get for them. Statistics time. Becky Lynch hit one full year as WWE Raw Women's Champion this week. It's the longest for any Raw or SmackDown Women's Champion since Trish Stratus, who actually didn't defend her title for 5 months during her period as champion. The last woman to hold a singles title for a full year on the main roster, not including Asuka, and actually defend it across that whole year was Sensational Sherry in 87 and 88. Angel Garza, Austin Theory, and the Street Profits had four matches between the March 30 and April 6 editions of Monday Night Raw. Zelina's last broadcast singles match was April 2019 on Worlds Collide. Her last singles match on Raw or SmackDown was August 2018. The Street Profits, Bianca Belair, Austin Theory, Garza, and Zelina segment went 35 minutes total, which is still shorter than the actual Edge versus Randy Orton match. Deonna Purrazzo has lost 14 straight televised matches in WWE. Outside of the Mae Young Classic, she is 0-20 on WWE or NXT TV. For this past week, Big Show and Drew McIntyre had their last one-on-one match in March 2012. Big Show won it in 1 minute 49 seconds. Big Show is 4-0 against Drew McIntyre prior to that. No WWE Raw Tag Team Champions have hit 100-day reigns since the brand split. That's our stats. Drops every Sunday. Early for you early birds here on Fightful Select, but thank you all so much. Your support, especially in this time, means a ton to me. Thank you so much. We're out.